You're listening to Understanding Disordered Eating with Rachel Heineman, episode 125. If you are a clinician and you missed the webinar on the basics of assessment of eating disorders and initial treatment of eating disorders, you can now purchase the replay on the website. So head on over there or in the show notes to grab your replay. Today's episode is with Pam Skop, and we're talking about all things postpartum. Now, there's obviously so much to any person's fertility journey, whether it starts from way before anybody gets pregnant. So this is, you know, we can even start this at puberty, hormone health, and then talk about everything from there. I figured there was way too much to talk about in just one episode. So I'm breaking it down. And today we're talking about postpartum. Postpartum is really, really difficult. So many people that I talk to are like, okay, I can see myself getting pregnant. I can see myself being okay with my changing body because I'm like literally growing a human. But once the baby's out, then we have a problem. And there's this whole bounce back idea. You have to look exactly the same really quickly, right after. And there's a lot of stuff that comes along with this period in time. But besides for the body image piece, which obviously we talk about in depth, there's so much more that's going on with a woman's body postpartum, whether it's physically, hormonally, emotionally. I mean, you name it, there is a ton. And we know the obvious ones, but there are so many that just don't get enough airtime that are pretty, pretty big. So Pam and I talk about all things postpartum, and of course, not all things. It's impossible to talk about everything, but we scratch the surface here. And because I know that this is such a personal thing, everybody has a very, very different experience. And even if you talk to people specifically, each person will have a very different experience if they've been pregnant more than once. So each pregnancy will be different. So if you have a pregnancy story, especially if something really like pops out at you during our conversation, come out and say something. Come hang out with me on Instagram, DM me, send me an email. I would love to hear your stories, and I would love to hear your body image story postpartum. Now, before we jump into the episode, a little bit about Pam. Pam is a licensed mental health counselor, certified eating disorder specialist, registered yoga teacher, and a postpartum doula. She owns the practice in New York City called Everybody Psychotherapy NYC and treats people with eating disorders, disordered eating, body image, and especially with the perinatal period. So this conversation is basically what Pam does literally every single day. And if you're a woman, probably you also do this literally every single day. So let's just jump right in.
Hello, Pam. Hello again, Pam. We're recording what for the second time?
Yes. Why not?
Thank you for coming. And thank you for coming again. I'm really excited to have this conversation. I think that there is so much change that women go through over the lifespan, especially hormonally. And it's impossible, obviously, to talk about the entire thing without doing it all justice, without there are too many negatives in there. You know what I mean? So I figured we would focus on your area of expertise and just like the postpartum, not necessarily immediate, but immediate postpartum and then maybe less immediate to see if we can sort of uncover some more science that can help people understand a little bit more of what's going on. And then, of course, talk about some of the psychological stuff, which is our jam and how all of that might really come into like a really big storm we can sort of try to avoid. So maybe let's start off our conversation with the basics of what's actually happening to someone's body physiologically or hormonally postpartum. And if it makes sense to give a little bit more context, like back up before that,
yeah,
just so that we can understand a little bit more, because I certainly don't know the intricacies. It's just sort of like, well, that's it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, right. That's such a good point. Like there's so many changes that happen. And I think it's hard to kind of like know it all and take it in. Even if it's happening to you, I don't feel like there's a ton of resources always that do a really good job of kind of explaining all of those changes.
Yeah.
So I think like, I think the place I often think about this or I want to start at is like, when a person is pregnant, their body creates a whole extra organ. The placenta is a new organ that the body creates to sustain this baby, right? So not only are you creating a baby, but you're also creating this organ that's going to keep this baby alive. And within that organ, there's also all these hormonal changes that are happening and different things. So when you have your baby, after a baby is born, the placenta is then taken out. If it's a surgical birth or if it's a vaginal birth, you know, someone will birth the placenta. And what's interesting about that is actually like the placenta was attached to the uterus, right? There's sort of like a wound, a gaping hole there that comes up. And I don't think people really think about this in terms of these changes that the body is going through, right? Like it's a totally normal part of the process. But like when you really think about it, you're like, wow, the body is really doing a lot in those moments.
Yeah. Like when we think about recovery or healing, we think about, oh, well, you've just been dilated for like 10 centimeters and pushed this thing out or had major surgery, and not right. thinking about that there's been this organ removed, and imagine this gaping hole scab situation going on internally. Like, oh, no, no worries. Just like a little tiny thing. But like, go back to work in 2 weeks, you know, no problem.
Yeah, like, right. It's a huge process that your body is undergoing in the recovery of all of this. Right. Yeah. Like you're saying, Rachel, I think a lot of people think about the external often, but not as much about like the internal changes. And I think another big piece along with that is like, is the uterus itself, right? It's grown to such a big size and it's shrinking back down postpartum. Which also means as the uterus grows, like all the organs get pushed out of the way and into different places, like the stomach, the diaphragm, like all that stuff, the lungs are pushed up, the bladder's pushed down, which many people who have been pregnant can probably relate to that feeling. But like as the uterus is coming back into its size, you know, moving away from the size it was pregnant back into its regular size, all of your organs are shifting too.
Right. So instead of just focusing on what a person looks like or what they feel like, there's all this stuff, which I think can provide a lot of context in terms of, you know, A, information, but also B, there's so many expectations of what postpartum yes. should look like. And we're talking about a really serious recovery period here with so many things happening.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much happening internally. And yes, I think like what you're saying is it's more serious, I think, than it's sometimes given weight to. Like what we know in our country is that women go for one visit postpartum at 6 weeks, usually. Sometimes if you have a C-section, you might go for like two visits to check out your scars. But most often, the only contact that a woman has getting checked out postpartum is this 1 6-week visit, which if we sort of juxtapose it to a baby, they're seen at like 1 week, 2 weeks,
yeah.
you know, regularly this whole time. So yeah, I think it's like, I think it's easy to kind of like dismiss that all these things are happening when our systems that are in place don't really give a lot of space to think about it and those needs.
Right. And I'm thinking about the larger culture, especially in this country, but not only this country, that because these systems are in place, then sends a message to us as individuals, this is how it's meant to be, as opposed to, and I'm not saying like change the system, you know, maybe that would be nice, but not super realistic. But the idea is perhaps the system is wrong in how they go about this. And one postpartum visit 6 weeks later is really not sufficient.
Yeah.
And of course, if somebody needs more medical attention or they're just concerned and they'd like to have their questions answered, like go for it. But just because, and this also extends to maternity leave, like just because they say that you have 6 weeks and you go to one appointment and then you're fine doesn't actually mean anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like we can, if we look at like the way that other countries do it, they tend to have a model where they're, I mean, I can't speak to everything, but more so in Europe, like they have a model where there's more visitation. People more often use midwives there. The midwives will come to people's homes afterwards and check in a few times postpartum. And I think like beyond that, even I was actually reading a book on this yesterday where it talked about like also the idea that like really every woman postpartum should have some sort of like pelvic floor physical therapy or being checked out in that way. Because again, there's so much that's happening in the body. The pelvic floor is such an important and vital part of keeping our organs in. And it takes a beating, you know, in pregnancy and postpartum. And I think that so few people have the understanding and the information about it, that it kind of makes sense that it should be standard care to like work on that area postpartum.
Yeah. So just to make sure we're not getting too ahead of ourselves, what kind of changes happen hormonally? So we can understand a little bit more physiologically, but in specifically with the hormones.
Yeah. So, I mean, the main hormones that are at play here in pregnancy and then also postpartum are estrogen, which, I mean, we know some stuff about often through our periods, somewhat. Progesterone is another big one. And then oxytocin and prolactin are like the main, what I sort of think of as like the main players. Estrogen is usually, I believe it drops pretty drastically postpartum. Progesterone's a little bit, I think it's like earlier on, that piece is more present. And then I think it might peak later on in pregnancy. But the main players postpartum are oxytocin and prolactin. So oxytocin is actually really important in a baby being born. It sort of creates this whole system, if you're having a vaginal birth, where you need oxytocin in your body to help your body continue to keep all these mechanisms going that are going to help the baby come out. And then we think of oxytocin as a feel-good hormone, right? It's a love hormone. So then when the baby's born, there's like a lot of oxytocin that comes up. And then prolactin is the hormone that is related to breast milk production. So like, even if you don't breastfeed your child, or if you're not able to, that is a hormone that's going to be a big piece of all this happening in your body, which is sort of like the opposite end of it. So we have these hormones that have very different things that have very different places in our body that come kind of in and out, even in just that period. But what we know from like an emotional level is that because of all these hormonal changes, women postpartum tend to get very emotional. I mean, it's one piece of it. We could talk about the other aspects.
Yeah.
Right. We could get into that as well. But like, I think it's really important for people to know. And I think oftentimes I see this with people that I work with, that they don't understand this. There's usually a period that happens about 4-ish days postpartum where birthing people just end up like crying. Like they're like, I don't know what's going on. So there's a lot of hormonal changes happening at that point. That's sort of what we would call like the baby blues. And then if that continues on for greater than 2 weeks is when we want to look at, is there like a perinatal mental health disorder, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for people to know and have that expectation in place that like all these hormonal changes are going on in the body. So to expect that you're going to feel emotional and weepy and any of those things.
Right. I do think that there is at least a small part of this that is expectation based. So if we can understand that there are so many things changing in the body, physiologically, hormonally, also externally, these are all physiological changes, but externally, there are so many things changing, and that there is a function to each and every one of these changes to perhaps temper as expectations of what we're meant to do. I heard someone say this, it's kind of wild how after labor delivery, it's sort of like a really massive procedure that you experienced. I mean, whether it was natural or C-section, vaginal or C-section, and it's the one procedure where you go home after a couple of days and then you're meant to do more, as opposed to every other procedure, you're meant to rest and rest as much as you possibly can. So like at the very least, if it doesn't sort of change our expectations of what you can possibly even do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a huge aspect of all of this and a really important way to think about it is like, yes, birth is a physiological process. It's not pathological, which is like diseased, right? But even though it's physiological, it is a traumatic experience to the body. And there's a lot that happens. And we still need to take good care of ourselves after those experiences. So I do think it's important to think about this. Like if your body went through another process where it was also bleeding afterwards, would you feel like you had to jump back into things, or would you think that you need to rest? And understanding that, like, when you have a newborn, like, rest is pretty impossible.
Yeah. And it's also important. So, okay. Yeah. I guess we'll talk about that double standard in a second. But I guess I'm curious if we can open up the conversation to talking about what, and obviously every person is different, but what could be expected in terms of body changes externally, especially because we have this like bounce back culture and your body goes exactly back to what it was and you can wear the same clothes and, you know, all these expectations that people have.
Yeah.
So what actually happens?
Yeah, that's such a good thing to look at. And again, I think this is that expectation like versus reality piece, where if you go into it with certain expectations and then you're disappointed, like it can just be much harder emotionally. So most of the time, you know, after someone gives birth, no matter what way their baby is born, their stomach's gonna be kind of doughy and, you know, still look pregnant. Like most people kind of say they look about 6 months pregnant right after giving birth. It's not going to like just suddenly firm up and look like it used to. You're not going to be getting back into your old clothes right away. Like, and again, I can't speak specifically to every single body, but most of the time, this is what we see. Like your body has taken all this time to expand, to fit this baby, to grow this baby. It's not just going to be like, all right, now we're back.
Right.
There really is a process. And I think understanding that what we see in like movies and stuff is not the reality. You don't leave the hospital with your body exactly as it was in the jeans you wore pre-pregnancy. You're everything's sensitive there. Everything's different. I think another big piece of it is understanding, and a lot of people experience this, like your core muscles are like kind of often not there post-pregnancy is kind of how people
totally
talk about
shot.
It. Yeah, exactly. Like everything's sort of like separated. Again, made room for baby. This is how you grew your baby, which is awesome. But understanding that like simple things, like even standing up from the couch, you're going to be like, oh, where are those muscles? So like there definitely is an aspect of all that stuff, again, needing rehabilitation and support and just understanding that that's like normal, I think is really important.
Yeah. I think also there has been a lot of attempt to normalize a postpartum body and saying like, yeah, keep your pregnancy clothes for right after. And, you know, at least for the first little bit. But then when we get into nitty gritties about specifics, like at 4 weeks, you can expect this. And at 6 weeks, once you have your visit, you can start working out. And then at 6 months, you'll be totally back. And understanding that those numbers might actually have more of a harmful impact because every person's different. And some people, their uterus might have contracted enough after a certain amount of weeks. And some people, it takes much longer. You know, like there's no, there is a standard, I guess, in standard medical practice of like what it looks like. I guess that's sort of where the 6 weeks postpartum visit comes from.
Yeah.
But like, there's no such thing as by X time, you should look X version of what you used to look like, because that's not going to be true.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also the expectation that for some people, like their bodies may change forever after this experience, which is, I understand can be hard to sit with, but also like, you know, it is a very big experience that your body goes through. So, you know, I think having that understanding can also be important. But yeah, these timelines that we put on it, like they're actually not telling us anything or giving us information. And I think even in particular, like the 6 week follow-up thing is an interesting one, because very often what happens post the 6 week follow-up is like, okay, you're good. You're cleared for everything. Your body isn't really ready for a lot of things.
Yeah.
But it needs some more time. And I think like how I've seen it at least show up for people that I've worked with is like, I think we need more of a reframe around what that means. People.
Yeah. Or at the very least, provide more of a variety of what it could possibly look like, because some people are going to bleed more than others, and some people are going to feel different. And even if people have multiple pregnancies, you're going to feel different from one to the other. You're going to look different from one to the other. Yeah. And that's like almost a guarantee. So providing a little bit more space for it to be like whatever is going on for you is going to be okay.
Yeah.
But I think I want to highlight what you said before about that your body might not ever go back. That I think is so, so difficult. And I think I'm sure you can relate to this, people talking about before they begin any fertility journey whatsoever, they know they want to have kids later on in life. And they're like, I'm struggling with my body image now. What am I going to do when I'm pregnant? Or I'm okay with the idea of pregnancy because that I'm feeding my baby. But like, what about postpartum? I'm terrified about postpartum. And I guess it comes to this because you can almost expect your body not to be the same as it was. And honestly, like even if it ended up becoming the same size as it was before, it will look different and it will feel different forever. Yeah. And that is like a really scary thing.
Totally. And I think like, obviously in our work, working with people with eating disorders, disordered eating and body image concerns, like it's such a big piece of what we see day to day. So like then navigating this like more nuanced piece of it and understanding that this is something that like could change your body permanently and most likely in some way will is really hard for people. So I think it is, it is an especially challenging part of the postpartum period to navigate all of this. And I want to be clear, when I say postpartum period, I at the least mean the first year of your child's life. There's like early postpartum, which is like right after, but
not like 6 weeks.
No, like the first year to 2 years is really like what we want to think about when we're thinking about postpartum period. Like there's so many changes still happening in the body, the hormones, like all of that stuff. There's a lot still going on.
Yeah. So I'm curious, this is probably a little bit of a tangent or too much of a tangent. So let me reel me in if need be. What happens when somebody gets pregnant before, like, let's say they get pregnant again at, let's say like 9 months or 12 months or even 18 months postpartum? Like, how does that, I mean, I know it works. It's been done before, but like what happens?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I know that there's different care providers who make different recommendations around that, but I've definitely worked with people who their care provider will say like, you shouldn't have a baby for a year. Not to be like, they're going to tell them what to do necessarily. Like there's still that bodily autonomy, but more so like, this is how long your body really needs to like heal from this experience. So I think it like often is a little bit more intense of an impact on the body and also an impact postpartum too, when you have a lot of young kids.
Yeah.
But I think it is a bit more intense of an impact on the body because it had time to work through some of the things in the same way. And it's not like it like got back to whatever its new baseline is and then you're starting again. It's really sort of like a continuation in a certain way for people who have their children closer together, which like, I want to be clear, there's no right or wrong about this, right? Everyone should make their own choices around it, but just understanding that it can be a little bit more intense in terms of your body and hormonal changes and all that's going on in your body.
Right. I think what you said before is just like the best way to look at it, that postpartum is 1 to 2 years postpartum, and just thinking about it in that context, as opposed to thinking like, oh, it's been 3 months. Like I should really be like up and about it with like family planning, you know, something like that, which kind of sounds ridiculous when you say it that way, but and of course, to each their own, this is your life. You choose whatever, I mean, if you have the capacity to choose, then you choose whatever works for you.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the differences between a vaginal and a C-section and how it impacts postpartum, how it impacts, and then of course, how it impacts like body image and things like that postpartum.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there's a couple of different ways that it has an impact, right? One piece is being that like, so much. I think that like in the way that there's been a lot of iterations, I would say, of like how birth is seen over time. And I think we're currently in a time where often the word natural birth is used for vaginal birth, making a C-section seem unnatural, right? So I think there's often a lot of stigma around that, which is why I usually try to use the word vaginal as opposed to surgical birth, right? Like trying to reframe that a little bit. So I think there's often the aspect of like, if someone went in and they were really set on a vaginal birth, like do they then, for some people, they then feel like a failure or something went wrong, especially if your information about all this is coming from one direction. So I think that there can be an emotional impact around that. To say that's not everyone's experience, right? Some people want a vaginal birth, but understand all these things and can have a surgical birth that feels very empowering to them because they chose it. They knew what all the information was, but that can definitely be a piece of it. If you had a certain expectation going into it and then that's not what happens, like emotionally, that's a big piece. You know, from the physical aspect, like a surgical birth is like a real intense surgery. They're cutting through your abdomen, multiple layers of tissue and all this stuff. And then, you know, kind of like pulling things out of the way, removing your baby, removing your placenta, and then sewing all this back up. So there's definitely a lot more healing in terms of like, you have a scar, you know, internally and externally, you have a scar that's healing. And it's not huge, but it's not insignificant. They had to pull a baby out of that, right?
Yeah.
So I think understanding that, like, that really is a surgery, and the healing from that takes into consideration any sort of surgical heal, any healing you might have from a surgery. So like wound care, all of those sorts of things. With vaginal births too, most people have some level of a tear and then will need stitches afterwards. So like there is that aspect of needing to think about that, but it's usually a little bit less intense than the care for a surgical birth. And yeah, I think there's just different needs in those ways, depending on what's happening for you individually postpartum. Again, I was reading something the other day where it talks about, and this is like a big thing for many people, which like, I don't know if it's like TMI for some people, but like,
now we have to hear.
But like a lot of people talk about their first poop post giving birth.
Oh my God, that it's worse than labor and delivery.
Yeah, exactly. And like, when you think about it, it makes sense. Like all of those organs were pushed around and moved around and like all these crazy things happened to them. And now they're like kind of trying to come back to figuring something out. So I think that's another piece of expectation. And again, like if it's surgical or vaginal, there's going to be different parts of that feel a little bit challenging.
Right. And I think, you know, just to bring up, to continue to bring it back to, you know, somebody who might be struggling with body image or their relationship with food, and somebody who might have a history with like, not necessarily laxatives, but just like, you know, their poop schedule has to be perfect or something like that. This is going to impact you. And not, this doesn't happen to everybody. It doesn't happen with every pregnancy, but like, there is so much that is off. And I don't want to say off, it's sort of expected within the process, but just sort of like, you're not going to bounce back in any way.
Right.
And I think for those of the people who on the outside seem to bounce back, whether it's on the outside, so their body goes back to some version of what it used to be, or they're back at work, or they're recovering, like they're just sort of out and about, those people, it's very possible that all of those things are true for them. It's also possible that it's not, and they're just sort of like putting on the show. They have to go back to work because they have to. But I think also the really big danger is that it creates this expectation in people's minds that I should be that too. I should be able to wear heels at a baby party that I meet 6 weeks after the baby's born. Or I should be able to take a walk in my fancy new stroller like my friend who had a baby 2 weeks ago. And I should be able to bounce back in my body. And I should be able to go to Pilates class, and I should be able to go back to work. And that is just unrealistic expectations from society or from people around you that are just not, it's realistic.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, that is a huge piece of all of this, right? Is like, I think as always, and I mean, you talk about this in terms of like food and body image too. Like we don't really know what's going on in someone's life or their mind or their body. We can't fully tell from the outside. So I think it's easy to look at certain people and be like, okay, they're like totally fine. Maybe they are, maybe they're not, but it's the idea that like, we can't really know, and the comparison isn't going to help us in any way.
Yeah. I think also this goes for movement. So, you know, the sort of blanket statement is once you go for your 6 week checkup, then, and you're cleared, you can go exercise. And I think, first of all, that implies that you can't do anything before and you can do everything after, like before the appointment versus after the appointment. And like, I don't necessarily think that the recommendation for everyone is to sit on the couch for 6 weeks. Like for some people, walk around the block is actually really nice. Like it depends on you. It depends on what you need. But also once you get the clearance for movement, it doesn't mean that you go right back to CrossFit or even the expectation that your body cannot even do that.
Yeah.
But like the relationship between healing, bleeding, all that stuff and movement before is like not anything that anybody talks about.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's definitely something that I think is important for us to look at and to think about in terms of all of this. And like, sometimes the recommendations that I often make to clients who are like, okay, like I got the 6-week clearance. I'm like, okay, first of all, let's try to understand what's going on that you feel like you're wanting to jump back into movement. We always want to understand it. Definitely like taking walks. I'm like, that's great. Do that before, do that after, whatever. Like that's, you know, if you're listening to your body, that's a great thing to do. But what I often recommend to people is finding resources where they're really catered to postpartum and understanding the needs of a postpartum body and starting there. Like, don't start just like running 4 miles. Don't jump into HIIT. Because again, from an understanding of like everything that's happening in the muscles and in the body, I just think it's a better way to support your body's needs and getting you back to those things as opposed to jumping into them and then having to kind of like take a step back or causing more damage.
Yeah. I think also we have to pay attention for a second what it feels like not to be able to work out or even stretch sometimes for 6 weeks and maybe longer for some people. And that, you know, with somebody who's sort of had a decent relationship with food and their body image before pregnancy or even during pregnancy, because they're just sort of had an easier time and they were able to do their thing. This is basically a hard stop. So I'm even like thinking about in my mind of lots of higher levels of care say, while you're here, no movement. If you make it to whatever level, you can do light yoga.
Yeah.
And there's this like hard no. That feels very similar to this in that if somebody has a lot of struggles with not moving, then this is going to be the loudest period because you're not really supposed to. It's not good for your body. You'll probably bleed a lot more. It's not so safe for your body to do it. And this person who we sort of like said, oh, I'm doing fine. Now we realize like, oh, how are you doing with no movement?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the bleeding thing I think is also important. Like something I always like sort of check in with people about is like, okay, you did this thing. And then I'll sort of say, okay, but like, how did your body respond? Because if you're bleeding more, that's usually a sign to kind of step back from things that you're going to doing too much for your body at that point. So I think paying attention to that is a really important piece of it from the perspective of like the physical perspective around it. But yeah, I mean, I think it can be a really hard time and a time that, you know, if you struggle with movement and your body image and all that stuff, you really have to work through some big things. I think a piece of what's also really hard is like you're emotional from the hormones. You're emotional because you're not sleeping. There's so many different aspects that come into it that just like make this time period often challenging from an emotional perspective.
Right.
So it might feel even harder not to rely on movement if that's something that's been a coping skill for you, whether or not it's a productive coping skill or one that comes from somewhere else.
Yeah. So, you know, talking about emotions and mood for a second, you know, obviously it's sort of expected for somebody to be more emotional and like the typical first week postpartum crying in the shower. I think I sort of heard from everyone.
Yeah.
But something that a lot of doctors I'm glad are proactive about is sort of like, you know, teaching about postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, and even postpartum psychosis that occurs. It's a real thing and it happens for so many people. And some people are like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally. I definitely think there's a lot of misinformation out there about this. And I think what's also tricky is like, yes, doctors do have screenings that they're doing on parents. And I think actually something which I think is great is pediatricians now are starting to do some of these screenings on new moms or new birthing people because they see them more often than the person's doctor themselves.
Right.
So they're starting to bring that in to try to understand more of like, you know, how are they doing? And doing a little bit, like a little bit of their own assessment of like seeing if this person needs support. But yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff is very common and we do not talk about it enough because I think often what happens is people get really like afraid of scaring people or afraid that there's something wrong with them if they're feeling or experiencing some of these things.
Yeah, I think, you know, we sort of have to treat it like just depression, anxiety, whatever it might be. And yeah, we sort of categorize it as postpartum something, but can we remove the postpartum just because that only tells us when it's happening? Maybe it has a little bit to do with hormones and stuff like that. Yeah. But in essence, if someone's struggling with depression or anxiety or a resurgence of their eating disorder symptoms, like whatever it is, that's what we deal with. That's what it is.
Right.
I kind of don't care how it happened. Like, it's happening.
Yeah. No, and that's actually such a good point, Raquel. Like, I think in the aspect of like, yes, it might be happening in this postpartum period, and hormones, I think, do play a role to a certain extent. But oftentimes the bigger aspect of it is that you're going through this huge life transition, right? And we know that life transitions have an impact on mental health, right? So it's like, yeah, it's like, it doesn't have to be just like, okay, it's like specifically because of this, but it's all the factors that are like involved in it and kind of contribute to it.
Yeah. This is switching gears maybe too much, but I wanted to make sure that we had enough time to talk about breastfeeding because that's a large part of postpartum for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things. There's obviously the changes that happen in the body and with the hormones, with breastfeeding and how it impacts body image and all that stuff, how it impacts weight, if anything, like so many myths. And then, of course, all the expectations that go in, breast is best. This is, you know, like this, you should be doing, you know, breastfeeding, not pumping, and all these different expectations, which, you know, just make things so much worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I've had some interesting conversations over the past couple of years, even with clients or with friends, about sort of this idea of breastfeeding, right? And I think very often I've talked to some people who are like, I had this idea that like either it was going to work or it wasn't going to work. Not that there's like so much nuance and so many things to work on and so many pieces to it. So I think that's like one part that's really important to talk about in terms of expectations is it's like, it's not just like, okay, this is happening or it's not happening. It's like, you're thinking about things like your supply. How is your baby latching? Does your baby have a tongue tie or a lip tie? Is there something that's maybe impacting the way that your baby can latch? What's going on in your body, right? There's so many things that can impact the production of milk. And like you're talking about, there's also been these like movements over time where like for years it was breastfeeding, and then it was formula in a big way, and then it went back to breastfeeding, and now it's, you know, I think fed is best is sort of the one we're in right now. But yeah, I think there's societal expectations, there's cultural expectations around all of this, and for sure a lot of myths as well. I think you brought up the idea of like breastfeeding for weight loss. I think like there have been over the years this idea that like it's true that your body does need to use more calories, more energy, right? In order to create and produce breast milk for your baby. But that doesn't mean it's going to lead to like weight loss or something. Because actually your body just needs a lot of energy to create this milk, which means that you should be eating an adequate amount, really making sure that you're feeding yourself while nourishing your body so that your body can produce this. But we don't very often see this idea of like, oh, you're breastfeeding, so then like you just like it increases weight loss or whatever. Again, it's all a process in terms of like what your body's going through and how it's going through that process.
Yeah. I mean, there's been so many stories just talking to people of, you know, what they're sort of using breastfeeding or not as something to manipulate their body. So for example, somebody who introduces like more pumping sessions because they think that it's going to help them lose weight, when in fact, and this is maybe not across the board, but what I've come to understand is if you don't feed yourself enough, you just don't produce much milk as you need. And so it's not so much like, oh, I'm not going to take in the energy, I'm going to use it to lactate and then I'm going to lose weight. It's like, well, it doesn't work that way. If you don't have the energy, then you can't produce the milk, in which case, like, there's no calculation happening here. But I've also heard the other way around, like, somebody wants to lose weight and so they intentionally stop breastfeeding because of that, whether it's because their boobs are like too massive and they're like, I can't handle this, or I don't know what, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And I think that to me also feels kind of sad if you're making a choice one way or the other, really, because you're concerned about how your body looks. And I think I say that with zero judgment, because each person has their own struggles and their own goals in life. But I guess what I would love for people is to make decisions based on what they're actually making a decision on, as opposed to letting them have this body image piece dictate like every aspect of their life.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the experience itself of like, how is this, putting together all the pieces of like, how is this working for you? How is this working for your baby? Like, what do you want to be doing? Yeah. And I think, I mean, in the same way, like I talk to, you know, I mention this all the time in my work with clients, like I can't tell you what's going to happen to your body, whether like, no matter what we're working on, I cannot predict anything about your body. And I think it's the same thing in this, that like, yeah, of course there's going to be some changes to the body when you stop breastfeeding, but like, we can't predict exactly what that's going to look like and what that's going to mean. So if you're holding on to this idea that if I stop this just to change my body, like there's no guarantee around that.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm thinking about, you know, as I reflect on our conversation here is obvious, and obviously there's so much more to postpartum. This is like a tiny smidge of what's going on, but to think about how can we either go through this journey ourselves or support the people around us in helping them with what they need. And I mean, obviously that's going to depend on what your role is in the specific situation, but at the very least for us to become part of a culture that creates individuality and each person getting their own way to do things, because no one chooses their way to do most of this. It's just sort of what happens, and creating a space that everybody is going to look different, is going to change differently. Everyone's postpartum journey is going to look different. Everyone's pregnancy is going to, like, 1 to 2 is going to look very, very different. And if someone chooses to have more, it's going to look even more different. So can we like take a step back and see how can we create more space for different experiences so that we don't create all this pressure and then contribute to poor mental wellness outcomes? And then all this body expectation, which is just like what we fight every single day to do.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love that we're talking about this idea of expectation, because I think so much of where this can be challenging for people and where sort of like emotional struggles come in is when the expectation and the reality do not match up to each other. And I think,
exactly.
Yeah. Sort of what you're saying in terms of like, how do we support people? Yeah. I think it is working on like talking in some ways, being more open about a lot of these things and the realities of them, which I think is really important to be doing, you know, and in other ways, sort of like asking people, like, what do you need? What's going to help your journey around this? And listening, you know, listening to them.
Right. Actually listening.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Not just being like, well, this is what I think, but like just giving the space for that.
Yeah. And then maybe even more importantly, if this is you we're talking about, to stop for a second and ask, what do I need here? Not what everybody else is telling me I should be doing or I should be feeling. What does my body say? What does my mind say? What do I need right now?
Yeah. Like, I think it's really great the way that this field is kind of moving in a sense. And I think not everyone, but certain people are definitely like thinking about things in a different way of sort of like, here's all the information, here's the research, here's what you know about this. How do you take that information and make your own choice? I think that one of the people who comes to mind for me, I don't know if I can mention this, but like Emily Oster is one of these like big people in the field right now. And her whole approach to all of this is like, here's the information that I've collected. Yeah. You make your choice about things like, can you eat sushi while you're pregnant? So I think it's really great to like come at it from that way, instead of making people feel bad or negative about the choices that they're making. Allow them really like know that people are smart enough to take in information and make their own choices.
Yeah. It's so funny that you bring her up, because I was listening to a Barry Weiss podcast a while ago, and she had mentioned that we've gone from a what to expect when you're expecting culture to Emily Oster culture, which is interesting because everybody I know still picks up the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. I feel like it's a little iconic just because of the title and things like that. But it is, I think the statement was a testament to the direction of our culture and individuals within the culture, saying that we need to place the power back into the individual's hands about what kind of experience do you want to have for yourself.
Yeah.
That is not dictated by other people's expectations. Of course, medicine and science and things like that. But in terms of the expectations, that's up to you.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think it is important to like put that back in the hands of people and to help them really know, given the information, like what is going to be helpful for you.
Yeah. And then of course, if somebody is struggling with their relationship with food or their body and, or depression, anxiety, that if you don't already have a therapist or a team, it's a really good, really, really, really important and a good time to reach out and get more help.
Yeah.
Because as new parents, like you need, it takes a village. Yeah. That's sort of what everybody knows. And so it is important to reach out for more support.
Yeah.
And then on that note, just before we wrap up, first of all, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Where can people find you if, say, you're the person they want to reach out to?
Awesome. So I have a practice based out of New York City, mostly virtual, called Everybody Psychotherapy NYC. We have a website. You can just Google that. We're also on Instagram and Facebook for anyone who still uses that.
New moms group on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. You can find that information there. But yeah, those are the best ways to find me and to reach out through my website, or my email address is on there. Always happy to, even if I'm not the right support person, connect people with support resources like OBs or doulas or midwives or any of that stuff. Happy to support people in finding their team.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for joining us. Time number two. Well, we'll have you back for a time number three that we'll actually publish.
Perfect. Thanks, Rachel.